Good morning. It's time for Free for All, your morning telephone discussion program from KATI.
And good morning and welcome into this very, very, very special edition of Free for All as we are remembering KATI Radio on this KT Classic weekend. And I'm being joined by just a ton of talent, I guess is what we'll call it. And we're not talking about weight. On the line with us on this very first edition of Free for All for this KATI Classic weekend. First off, we have Wee Willie Sims, Bill Sims, who is in Puerto Rico, Bill Yeager, who is in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Bill was with KATI in the very early 60s. Armand Noble is calling from Sacramento, California. Let's see, Jody Linneman also. He went by Big Daddy Linneman. He was on the air, about 1961, 62, and he's in Sacramento as well. Larry Payne is down in Colorado. Sarge McClintock in the great state of Washington. Then in studio, we have Kevin Meenan, who is the son of the longtime owner of KATI, Pat Meenan. And then Ray Ebert is over here behind this monitor, and I'm sorry, I just about missed you. He's also in the studio. So welcome to all of you folks to this very, very special edition of Free for All. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello. What a treat.
Kevin, I think let's start with you only because Pat Meenan was the owner of KATI or a part owner of KATI from the late 50s all the way to the early 80s, over 25 years. Talk a little bit about your dad and his love of KATI and later KAWY.
Well, my father absolutely loved the radio business, and more important, and he said it to me more than the one occasion, that he loved the people that came in and out of his life and the ones that worked for him at KATI. And I'll tell you, these fellas you got on here today are legends, and it's great to hear their voices again. My dad actually bought into the radio station with Canon Misha Prather, mm-hmm. who bought the station from a fellow named Jack Breeze that bought it. And these guys remember the days of the KATI Cave and the dump and moving the studios from the Midwest building to McKinley over to the new studios on KATI Lane. And so I'm anxious to hear what they have to say. But I wish my father were here. He passed away in 2001, but he would love to talk to all these guys.
I have kind of a surprise, I think, for you and for the rest of the group. In 1981, they did a 25th anniversary edition of Free for All. Your dad, Pat, was a guest of Free for All. Even though he hosted it for years, he had given it up, and Bob Coleman was the host of Free for All. We have some audio from your dad from 1981, talking about those early years at KATI.
It was about a year later when Ken and Misha Prather bought the radio station from Jack Breeze. Jack was one of these people that just liked to start radio stations and then sell them and move on. His father was, Ed Breeze, was a longtime Wyoming legislator there from Lander. So I don't know where Jack is, but he's the one that started it.
You became involved in 1957?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. As what? A janitor, a district or what?
I was a member of the Casper City Council, and the Prathers had known me there, and our studios were down the Midwest building at Midwest and Walcott, right downtown. They called that the KATI Cave. It was down in the basement there, and that's where the whole thing started. I had my offices upstairs, and they had heard about me, and they came to me for some accounting advice, and when they were buying it from Jack, and I ended up buying a third of it with them. They owned two-thirds, and that's the way it stayed until about 1963 when they had moved to Boulder and started a radio station down there and wanted to sell this. Well, in 63, a guy named Don Price and I ended up buying it from the Prathers, and then Don had a heart attack and then eventually died, and so I ended up with it.
First of all, let me ask you, where did KATI come from, KATI? Why did you call it KPAT or something like that.
Well, that was, there again, that was Jack Brees's idea, and he believed in call letters that, you know, you could pronounce and rhymed. And in those days, that was really a big deal. He had, you know, this vivacious woman, and she was Katie, Casper's favorite girlfriend, and that's kind of the image that stayed ever since.
How long has Free For All been on the air? The program.
Well,
doing right
Misha
now?
Prather actually started Free For All, and it used to be on during the noon hour, as I recall, when it first started. It's been on the air since about 1957-58.
Kevin, a voice from the past there.
Yeah, great to hear him.
Armand, you were there in the late 50s from around, what, 1959 or so?
About then, yes.
Talk a little bit about Katie during those years. Of course, that was the early years. It had only been on the air just a couple of years at that point in time. Talk about the kind of music they played. I think Pat described the music always at Katie as not necessarily top 40, but popular music. How would you describe it?
Well, they let me play anything. And in fact, I was telling some people here the other day, Sink the Bismarck. Remember that song? All the other records were running 2 minutes, 2 and 20 seconds. And the reason Sink the Bismarck became such a hit, it ran 5 minutes, is when the guy on the board had to go to the bathroom, he played Sink the Bismarck. And it was the only record of the day that lasted 5 minutes.
Talk a little bit about the Hootie Owl show that you did. When was it on, and what time of day, and that?
Well, it was on from 9 till midnight. The station went off the air at midnight, and it was all automated with that Gates machine in the back. And I remember one time I was out getting some pizza to go, and the guy at the pizza store said, "I'm listening to you on the radio." And I said, "Yeah, I got to get back before the record's over."
Bill Yeager, you were also one of the early ones. Tell us a little bit about when you were there and the time of day and all of that that you were on.
Well, when I first came, it was to replace Ken Brather. Ken had got to the point where he felt he could get off the air and concentrate on the business end. And, you know, add one person to his staff. So I took over the morning show from Ken. And I think I had said that it was in 1962, but hearing Jody say that he came in 1961, I must have the year wrong. I must have started in January of 61. After a while, I moved to middays when a fellow named Larry Laverne came in, and we put him on the morning show when Steve Harris, the late Steve Harris, was about to go with the Prathers to a new station they opened in Boulder, Colorado. And I took Steve's place then as the program director and engineer of record. And record is about all, because I'm one of those guys who got a sheet of paper that said he knew something, but all I knew how to do was pass the test. And Steve and some other folks there and Casper held my hand and kept us, you know, on track.
I have another quick piece of audio that I would like to play for you to see if anybody remembers this time period.
It's wonderful. Summer radio on KATI in Casper.
I'm figuring that was a jingle from about 1959 to 61, something in that neighborhood, maybe even earlier. Any comments?
This is Sarge. I came in 61, and I never heard that. It must have been before my time.
Some of these and this is audio that was provided by Kevin and was part of Pat's menagerie of stuff in his garage and storage area. And this was actually transferred from an old, what was called an ET, or an electrical transcription. It was actually originally a jingle on record.
Well, I've heard it before. This is Bill. So maybe it came later. You know, I'm a mainly 63, 69 person, so I've heard that before.
That's one of the things that I've heard from several people, is that Katie was the kind of radio station with the talent and the programming and whatnot, that you could have picked that radio station up from this little town of Casper, Wyoming, and dropped it into any major metropolitan area, and it would have been competing with all of the big giants. Anybody disagree with that?
Oh. We had some good people.
Larry Payne, you're a local talent. You and Jody Lineman both came out of Wyoming.
As a matter of fact, Jody really played a big role in my life changing it, because I'd come out of the service. Jody and I had been in the band at Converse County High School and in Douglas. He was a good friend at that time, and lo and behold, he was on a local radio station. The call letters there in Douglas escape me right now, but...
KWIV, Larry.
It was KWIV?
Right.
KW4, okay. Where you hear more of what you listen to the radio for.
That's right. It was definitely a daytimer, and I remember I stopped by to visit Jody, who later became Big Daddy Lineman on KATI, and... we reminisced a little bit about our school days and everything, and he said, I think he handed me the news and said, here, read this. You know, it was a very small station. And so I read it, and the manager at the time, refreshed my memory, Jody.
Joe Henry.
Okay, yeah. Joe Henry came in, and he said, who is that reading the news? And I identified myself as Larry Payne, and everything. He said, well, how would you like a job? And I ended up doing a little rock and roll show in the afternoon on that station, and I thought I was some kind of superstar, so I went up to, you know how you get in the radio business. And so I went up and I auditioned at all of the stations in Casper, and of all the stations, they all said, good voice, bad diction, you know. So I ended up being hired by Ken Prather to sell. And he and his wife, Misha, used to put me in the production room there and record me as long as I would stay in there and record. And about a year later, I was, I think I got to be afternoon drive. I'm not sure. It was exciting for me and really a launching pad for my radio career. I left the station several times over the years. I kept going back.
Bill Yeager, you have a great story about Jody Lineman and how you hired him and his quest for a name. Can you relate that?
Yeah, this will go back a little before Jody, because there was, well, the reasons will become obvious. I hired a guy named Warren Cook, and he wanted to call himself The Blob. Well, I didn't object to that, so he went on the air as The Blob. And Sid King, who was our sales manager, thought that was the worst name he had ever heard. And so when I hired Jody, Sid was really worried that he better supervise me in getting these guys on the air with a reasonable name. And he came in and he met Jody, and he didn't like the name Lineman. Sorry, Jody.
He said,
he said it's really not a good radio name. And Jody said, I know it. I understand. He said, don't worry about it. I'll come up with a good one. And we left it at that. And then both Sid and I learned for the first time that Jody didn't understand that the name we didn't like was Lineman, because when he came on the air, he was Big Daddy Lineman. He was getting rid of the Jody.
Hey, Bill,
yeah.
Parenthetically, whatever happened to Sid King?
I don't know. I don't know at all. He and I parted company, when I left the station, and I never heard.
I worked for Sid briefly over at KVOC. He was a manager
there.
Absolutely,
not briefly, quite a long time. He went across the street to KVOC and was there for years.
Mm-hmm.
Bought a station somewhere in California and moved there.
I had heard that didn't he go to, I believe it was Apple Valley, California, or someplace out there in the high desert?
Victorville, California.
Victorville, that was right, yeah.
Victorville, yeah. That's where Sid, he passed away, I think, in Victorville.
Bill Yeager, talk a little bit about where you went and from Katy. I mean, you had a long, illustrious career in broadcasting, not necessarily in radio, but talk a little bit about where you went after Katy and how your life progressed.
Well, I've got to offend everyone north of a certain parallel here in that Casper, Wyoming was not for me because I was from the southwestern United States. And when I got up there to Casper, after being told it was a little colder than where I came from.
Which was New Mexico, right?
Right. I came from New Mexico. My first morning on the air, my car had broken down and I had to walk to work. It was about a mile. And I'm dressed in my Albuquerque clothes. And I'm walking along and I'm thinking, gee, it's cold. And I get there and I look at the thermometer for the first time. And it's 39 below zero.
One of the warmer days.
Yes.
I said 10 degrees colder, expletive deleted.
And the wind was probably not blowing that day either.
Yeah, I'd probably have frozen to death on the way to work if it had been. Gee. Yeah, 39 degrees. But anyway, when I left there 1 week, we had a high temperature of 20 below.
Now, wow.
That winter was the coldest winter since 48. And so, I saw the worst of winters. And that week we had 20 below as our high temperature. And I was driving in my car and tuning the radio, as all air people do, just picking up distant stations. And I picked up a station, and they said the low temperature tonight is going to be 70 degrees. It was a mistake that they were talking about the high. But it was the low. I picked up a San Antonio, Texas station, and at the end of that weathercast, I said, I am going south. And I did. I went back to Albuquerque, and I also worked in Tucson, Arizona, and wound up my broadcast career in New Orleans. I worked radio and television in New Mexico, Arizona, and in New Orleans, and until Hurricane Katrina retired me. It took my house and my job. And I looked at the calendar and decided, you're an old guy. You could retire. And I did. And have not regretted it.
Well, Bill is now living in Baton Rouge. One of the other folks from the Enchantment State was Will/Bill Sims, as he was known at Katy. And we're going to get his story when we return on this very special edition of Free for All on this Katy Classic Weekend. Back with our special edition of Free for All, and with us, Kevin Meenan in the studio, Ray Ebert in the studio. Ray was in sales for Katy and KWI for a number of years. Armin Noble, Larry Payne, Big Daddy Linneman, Sarge McClintock, Bill Yeager, and Wee Willie Bill Sims, who is in Puerto Rico now, but you've been down there for the last 4 years is what you told me, but... That isn't your native homeland, is it?
No, I really consider myself from New Mexico. I'm a New Mexico guy, basically.
Over the years, I think you were probably, as I look back at between you and maybe Larry Wakefield, were probably the two longest employed people by Ken and Misha and later Pat Meenan. You started in what year?
I think it was 61. It was Ken and Misha who hired me. Actually, honestly, Misha hired me. Because she didn't want to do traffic anymore. This was an idea that Steve Brumell had, which was to get her off of having to do the logs, the programming logs. So I was hired to come in the afternoon and do the logs, the program logs, and I would then go to dinner and come back and do what we, and then called Night Train, a show that actually Steve Brumell had brought from Albuquerque. We had a similar show down there. So that was my beginning. But I did that for about a year, and then they went to Boulder. Ken and Misha and Steve went to Boulder. Sid King became the manager, and I was missing Albuquerque, and I wanted to go back to Albuquerque, and so I did for about a year. I was gone for a year, and Pat bought the station, and wanted me back as program director, of all things. I'm a crazy man. And so after a year of absence, I came back in, I think, about 63 and was there for 6 years until 69.
Bill, can we talk a little bit about a person who has passed that was such a dynamo in so many different ways? And the person I'm talking about is, his real name was Steve Brummel, but his air name and his persona was the Fat Daddy Steve Harris. And I know that all of us in this room had a whale of a time with Steve over the years. How did Steve get started at Katy, and what was a little of his background, and particularly as it related to Bill Sims and all the other folks here?
We both worked at KLOS in Albuquerque, both Steve and I. And he got a call one day, I believe, from a guy who used to program KLOS, a guy named Bill Prevetti, who was now selling jingles on the road. And he got to Casper and met Ken and Misha and said he had a guy down in Albuquerque that would make both a chief engineer and a program director. Now, us radio folks know that that's pretty unusual. And by golly, they hired Steve to come to Casper to do both of those things. And we all know that he was a technical genius, absolutely incredible. But you know what? He was also great on the air. He was a very good radio announcer, and he was also a good program director. He got letters from folks who, you know, congratulated him for playing their record first. One was The Sound of Silence by Paul Moria, as I remember, and he got a letter from Simon and Garfunkel, one or the other, because he played one of their songs before anybody else in the country. He was
Simon,
a genius.
Katy had a gold record that hung on the wall for years, and I don't know if it ended up in Pat's estate or if someone walked away with it, but The Sounds of Silence by Simon and Garfunkel, another one was the song Love is Blue that he actually heard on KAWY and thought that was a great song by Paul Maurier, and he brought it to Katy. He had a heck of a talent for picking songs and listening to the music and saying, boy, that is a great production piece or whatever. I'm getting audio from a lot of different sources for this Katy Classic weekend, but I do have a piece that probably none of you have heard since at least 1962 or so, and this is Steve Brummel and I believe Larry Laverne. See if you remember this contest.
Announcing a contest of great scope and magnitude with a most unusual prize.
The United States of America.
Yes, the United States of America.
Katy is giving away the United States of America.
Be the first in your neighborhood to win the U.S. of A.
Here's all you do.
Listen to Barry Mann sing Little Miss USA.
Then tell us the names of all the states mentioned in the song.
Write all the names on a card or letter and send them to Katy, Box 2006, Casper.
You can win
the United States of America.
That was Fat Daddy, Steve Harris, and a contest.
Larry Laverne was a great production guy, a great voice, and a heck of a nice guy, but that was me, the other voice, Bill Yeager.
Oh, okay, all right.
That's what I thought too, yeah.
Okay, well, see, we were trying to figure it out, but I'm glad to hear that it was you, Bill.
My voice was a little higher then, and
of course, we were all younger then.
Yeah.
Indeed.
I guess the next area that we would like to talk about is an era that Katy moved from the Katy Cave in the Midwest building, went over to McKinley, and it seems to me from everything, and I never worked at McKinley Street, but it seems to me that that must have been a real hotbed of just talent at the time. I've heard commercials, I've heard production pieces, I've heard great practical joke stories that came out of there. I remember a promotion. Bill Yeager, you might be able to, I can remember hearing this when I was a kid, the first underwater broadcast. Bill, can you remember that?
Yeah, I had the misfortune of doing that broadcast. It was one of those things where everybody says, oh yeah, that's a great idea, let's do that. But when it came time to do it, nobody wanted to. And I was the most unlikely guy on the staff to do it. I can't swim. But nobody would do it. And so I did the first underwater broadcast and probably the last in the state's history.
How did you technically do it? I remember hearing was blah, 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 you know. But
and that's all there was. It was a completely silly idea, but it was fun, like a lot of the stuff we did at that time. A local store, a sporting goods store, brought in a huge tank with a window in it, and they put on scuba demonstrations in the tank and so forth, and we were going to do our underwater broadcast. Well, we had no equipment for that, so they put scuba gear on me. The scuba divers were alarmed when they found out I couldn't swim, but I had scuba gear. I could breathe, you know. I could walk. So I went under the water with a regular microphone like you have in the studio over there in a plastic bag, taped up so that the water wouldn't get into the microphone, and dangled down by its audio cord. And I'm down underneath there, and I'm...
Can you say electrocution?
Yeah, I was a little worried about it, but Steve had it under control. He promised me I wouldn't be electrocuted, and I wasn't, but obviously. But you couldn't understand a thing I said. I'm talking in a regular microphone underwater with a mask on, and it's just... Bleh, 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 and that was... That was all there was to it.
Sarge McClintock, did you get involved with any of those kind of promotions while you were at Katy?
Gee, Joe, I'm sitting here listening, and some things are coming back to me. I was a high school kid when I joined Ken and Misha there, 1961. I came down from Billings, Montana, where I'd been working radio, and started doing a two-hour rock and roll show for the kids at night. I recorded it on that big piece of Gates jukebox that Armin referred to. And, we got involved in some memorable promotions. Anybody remember the Miss Icicle promotion?
Absolutely.
I forget the exact details. Maybe somebody can fill them in. I recall that in the middle of a bitter Casper winter, we went on the air and asked for volunteers, for female listeners, to put on a bikini.
Sarge, this is Jody, and... I do remember, this is things that I've laughed about for 40 years here, but you ask her to have a parasol, a bikini, and a poodle, and walk around that big block downtown, and if I recall, she was about 65 years old, and the only one that participated, and it was a blizzard. Sarge, do you remember after that when we went to the new Wonder Bar to thaw her out and what happened down there?
No, tell me.
Oh, my God, I'm not sure I should. We're on the air, but it was quite memorable. But she had a tattoo that she just had to show us all underneath that bikini. And we were drinking, I don't know, hot toddies of some sort to get her thawed out and us also. But,
I think you should have just said she showed everyone her poodle.
As I recall, what we did was we started the prize at $14 or something, you know, the 1400 frequency,
right.
And added $10 to it every day until somebody volunteered to be Miss Icicle, something like that.
Yeah.
And that's where she came from. But yeah, as a high school kid, I was doing a rock show at night. I remember listening to... Armin's program, the Hootie Owl Show. I loved Armin's program. Armin, to this day, I have a love for Stan Kenton and some of that cool jazz that you used to play. You introduced me to that.
Yes, the theme song for Hootie Owl was Kenton's Opus in Chartreuse.
Right, right.
And I still have it, and I listen to it every now and then.
I do, too. You gave me a love for Kenton, and as I say, that kind of cool jazz. Another promotion we used to do in those days was we used to have dances for the kids out at the tennis courts. Anybody remember that? Apparently, I'm the only one that remembers it, but we used to have tennis court dances, sock hop type things in the summertime.
I remember Battle of the Band type of things that they used to do at the Industrial Building at the fairgrounds, too.
That came later, yeah.
Ray Ebert is with us, and of course, Ray is kind of representing the sales side of Katie. But first, before we do that, I have something to play for Ray.
It's time to announce another winner in the What Kind of Man Listens to Katie contest.
Oh, joy. Oh, rapture unforeseen.
Sixth prize,
a miniature orange plastic Christmas tree.
And the lucky winner was Ray Ebert, a salesman for a local radio station. Ray commented,
a miniature orange plastic Christmas tree? What for?
Will suspense never end?
Stay tuned to Katie for more happiness and winners.
I tell you what, I've been digging through lots of cardboard boxes here lately and have come up with lots of things. Ray, talk about your time at Katie. You obviously dealt with Sid King and Ken and Misha and Bill Sims as manager over the years.
I came in 1965. Ken and Misha had already been gone, but the one thing that out on the street when I was a salesperson, I had clients keep telling me about when Katie went on the air, Ken and Misha, or whoever owned it to start with. Who was that, Ken?
Jack Breese.
Yeah,
Breese.
Jack Breese. Sent out a postcard to all the businesses in town, Katie is coming. And there were so many wives that worked in the small businesses and stuff, and they'd go to their husbands, and they'd keep saying, who's this Katie? Who's this Katie coming? Who's this woman, you know? And no one knew what Katie was at that point. But it was, I kept running into it on the street all the time in the early years, and there was a lot of different promotions that we did on a constant basis. You know, I'm sure everybody remembers the Katie caboose at the dump, you know.
How about this? Do you remember this?
One moment, please. I'll connect you with Katie.
That was Katie the Cutie.
Yes.
Katie, yeah. The Cutie in Casper.
Oh, yes. Well, do you remember the kissing tone, you know, that was on? Oak's Jewelry kissing tone, you know. We did the Lady Godiva promotion, you know. That was the one with the ribbon in your hair.
I have to comment on that. That's one my father was the mayor of Casper, and I'm sure Bill Sims remembers this as well as Ray, but they had this huge competition about Lady Godiva riding bare naked down their bear down the streets. And
in anyway, her bear skin.
In her bear skin.
With a ribbon in her hair.
Yeah, yeah. And so huge turnout, no parade permit. The police ended up trying to find someone they should arrest, and there was my father. There's a great picture in the Star Tribune that we have of my father, who can't stop laughing, and nor can anyone else stop laughing, a very angry police chief. He ended up getting cited for no permit. But, yes, of course, it was a woman in a dress like a grizzly bear riding a horse down the street.
And those were fun promotions. And I'm sure Bill will remember this. When Sunrise opened, we had a helicopter, and we dropped ping pong balls out of the air off of this helicopter.
I was just hoping you weren't going to say live turkeys.
No, but ping pong balls, and they had little notes on them and gifts from the business people there. But I think the station got arrested for littering that time, you know. So you remember that, Bill?
I do, for sure.
Okay. But we constantly did a lot of promotions. In those days, I thought, to me, radio was a whole lot of fun because we did a lot of stuff with the theaters, you know. I can remember one movie that came out, Walk, Don't Run. I had an odometer on me, and it was the people were supposed to guess how many miles I'd walk in a week or so. You know, we constantly did, you know, when Stagecoach came out, that was a lot of fun. We had Stagecoach rides. Every time there was a downtown Crazy Days, we'd have little horses all over for the kids to ride. And then one thing that I do remember, and this was a little bit later in years, because John Garrity was on the sales staff with me at that point, and we did a Tom Sawyer Hilltop promotion for one of their anniversaries, and we had whitewashing the picket fences, and And we ordered some frogs out of Texas, big frogs, and we had some frog jumping contest. And
oh boy.
Garrity didn't have a garage, so they got stuck in my garage, and then they got loose. And my wife was calling, screaming that the frogs are jumping everywhere, you know. So there was a lot of fun, you know. Tanya the White Reindeer, you know, that was a great promotion.
Well, I tell you what, another one of those great promotions was one that was involving the Katy Caboose. And we're going to talk about that when we return on this very, very special edition of Free for All on this Katy Classic Weekend. Stay with us. Welcome back to a special edition of Free for All on this Katy Classic Weekend. We are being joined now by a gentleman from Omaha, Nebraska. Enter and sign in, please, Carl Mann.
Well, thank you. This is a tremendous project you're putting together. I'm in Omaha, Nebraska now, still in radio, amazingly enough, at an oldies network. We have about 40 affiliates. I was at KATI in 1963 for about 1 year. And what a year it was. Some stories we have to trade here today. I went from there to Billings, Montana at Cook, and from there to KOMA in Oklahoma City. And it was pretty much the same path that J. Michael Wilson took, oddly enough. But it ended there. I went to Omaha, Nebraska to COIL after that.
We had some very, very, very talented people at Katy all throughout all the years. I know that there are a lot of people out there that have gone on to bigger and better things, KOMA. One of the ones that Carl just mentioned is a guy by the name of J. Michael Wilson, and maybe somebody can of the group here can relate a little bit about his background. We tried to find him, and all we got was emails that would bounce back to us. But can you talk a little bit about J. Michael Wilson?
Well, this is Sarge. I can tell you how he got his name.
Okay.
J. Mike and I worked together up in Billings. Were you there at that time, Carl?
I never met J. Michael. I communicated with him by email about 5 years ago, and that was it. Yeah,
we had worked together previously at Katy. I moved on up to Cook, and when there was an opening on the staff, I recommended Mike to the program director. He was going by the name Mike Wilson at that time. And by the way, he was a remarkable chess player. He was the chess champion of the state of Wyoming at one time.
Wow.
And when we were roommates for a while, he really improved my chess game, I can tell you that. But at that time, I was deeply under the influence of an L.A. jock named B. Mitchell Reed, and I thought he was about the best there ever could be. So Mike Wilson and I are having coffee in Billings one day, and I said, hey, you know what would be cool is if you called yourself J. Michael Wilson. His first name was John. He went by Mike Wilson. I said, how about J. Michael Wilson? And he looked thoughtful, and he said, And so, yeah, he changed his name to J. Michael Wilson, and moved on up the ladder.
Now, one of the things that in this air check that we're going to play is he had a very distinctive character that was with him during his program. Can anybody tell us about that character and how he did it?
Well, this is Carl. He developed that at KOMA. It was Rodney the Robot. No, Rodney the Rodent. And it was just a sped-up tape that he recorded of himself, and it turned into such a popular character. He kept it with him when he went on to Detroit.
And here is J. Michael Wilson, who was at Katy, what, from about 1962, 63? Would that be about right?
Before then, because he was there when I arrived.
Okay. So here is J. Michael Wilson, and sorry we don't have Katy audio, but this is audio out of, I believe, it may be Detroit.
21. Those are the trade winds. I'm gonna take a rocket to Mars. I'm gonna take a hike to the stars.
Yeah,
I should have been a trade wind, Michael. Yeah, that's a mind excursion. By the way, kid, when is yours due back?
Oh, you're funny. 3 after 11 o'clock here, Keener. Marlene says howdy to Debbie and to Marie and to Nancy. J. Michael Wilson along with Rodney the Blunder Rodent till who knows when. Donna says it to Danny. And wait a second now. Wait a second. All the girls at Divine Child High say howdy to Arch. Huh. What's this with Art getting all the dedications tonight? What's Art have that I don't have? Now, where can I get it, huh? Number one song here at Keener 1-3.
J. Michael Wilson Showtime.
704.
Okay, there he is. Did he sound that good when he was at Katy?
He was very good.
No, huh?
Not quite that good. He really started to hit his stride at Cook, I think. And then what a cool surprise it was to hear him on KOMA. And the same goes for you, too, Carl. What a cool surprise.
Carl, talk a little bit about coming from Casper, Wyoming, or obviously you didn't come from Casper, but going to Cook and that progression on to the bigger markets. And we were talking with Kevin a little bit earlier about the number of people that had worked at Katy, and it was probably approaching 250 to 500 people that went through the doors of Katy over the years, and a lot of them went on to bigger and huge, huge stations in big markets.
Well, one of the reasons was KOMA was our major competition at night in Casper. So naturally it was something that we kind of all aspired to. You know, you look back, it was all plain luck. Sarge is the one that got me up to Cook in Montana. And then from there, it was just luck landing at KOMA again. But that was just one of those dreams come true.
Larry Payne, you went on to radio in Omaha and other places, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I was the national production manager for Don Burden at Star Stations. Talk about a guy that was off the scale. He was very, very abusive to everybody around him, and I worked at the I was a kind of a fill-in on the FM station there, but I was really in production, which has been my
forte
all these years. As a matter of fact, when I ended up in Dallas, Texas, I ended up being first call down in Dallas after a torturous 60 days of no work. It's interesting. I ended up going to Craig, Colorado after being in Denver for a short period, and the station went, KBTR went all news, and we were all rock and roll jocks at the time, and hey, anybody do news? Nobody raised their hand, so we all got a last paycheck. One of those kind of situations.
Do you remember this voice?
Hello, America. Low prices are making big news again at Sawyer's Riverside Thrift Mart. Good news headlines for people who like to eat. Every byline, a bargain at Sawyer's Riverside Thrift Mart. Ground beef, 49 cents a pound. That's the top column lead. Here's one more for the main course. Tender, juicy top sirloin, $1.09 a pound. There's a feature article about green groceries. Would you believe mix or match frozen peas, beans, or broccoli spares 5 for $1? Only at Sawyer's. Where you save in three big ways: selection, prices, quality. Sawyer's Riverside Thrift Mart in the Riverside Shopping Center.
You know,
Paul Parvey.
You want to tell the Would secret they? About that spot? I know a secret about that spot.
The secret is, I think we won an award for it.
1969.
The Wyoming Commercial of the Year. But the client never bought it. The client wouldn't pay for it.
The real story is, I think he did run it for a while and went out of business 3 months later.
What I remember was we ran it once for free and put it in the contest and won the contest.
Well, you're exactly right.
Foggy.
He probably wouldn't pay you for it because he had already sent a check to Paul Harvey.
Come on, American. But it was a fun deal, and that led me into doing impressions for a lot of commercials down in Texas. And so Katy again strikes again. You know, a little good luck there, and Bill Sims and Larry Wakefield were very supportive of me doing a lot of production. One thing I remember we did is a whole week for the Terrace Drive-In.
Oh, sure.
You know, we didn't win any awards or anything, but it was a dynamic promotion. We had a different promotion every day of the week, and We packed them in, I'll guarantee you. It was fun.
Yes.
Yep.
Does this sound familiar?
The story you're about to hear is true. Only the movies have been changed to protect the customer. This is the H-Week Caper. This message is for Gene Crist. Mr. Crist, if you decide to take this assignment, and it should somehow be a success, you will be responsible for restoring Casper's faith in the drive-in theater. We've been notified that the H-Week Caper is about to happen in Casper, Wyoming, the week of the 10th through the 16th of July. Some crazy fanatic is planning to have a different holiday each night out at the Terrace Drive-In Theater, Christmas, Easter, and so on. We have reason to believe, Mr. Crist, this would destroy everyone's faith in a drive-in for family entertainment. It is your job, Mr. Crist, to stop H-Week from happening at all costs. This commercial will self-destruct.
I remember sitting in the studio with Larry Payne as he was producing that commercial. And isn't that Fibber McGee's closet there, Larry?
It might have been. I remember we were looking for a way to end the spot, and we came across that on the sound effect library and said, oh, that would be a hoot, that damn... evil self-destruct just went on and on and on and on. It was a fun promotion.
Well, we have the entire promotion, and we will be playing the spots from that promotion throughout the weekend. Before we went into the break, we alluded to a promotion that was run from the Katy Caboose, and Big Daddy Lineman was involved in... Jody, talk a little bit about your marathon and how it got started.
First of all, when I went to Katy Radio, I had been in radio at KWIV in Douglas. We mentioned that before. And I'd been out of radio for probably about a year and a half at the time. And I had heard, I was helping a guy paint his house on the inside, and heard Larry Laverne on the radio, and I just cracked up. I thought his show was the best. So I went down to meet him, and he introduced me to Bill Yeager, and I told him, of course, I'd been in radio, and Yeager hired me. And I was a kid at the time. I was 19, 20 years old, and looked up to these guys. I thought, wow. I listened to Coma, Oklahoma City for all of my young years, and always wanted to aspire to something like that. So anyway, I got on the show, and they decided to do the Katy Caboose. They built a caboose that looked like a caboose, and had two little turntables in it. And, of course, this is way before 8-track and all of that stuff, so we had reel-to-reel, and I had a radio with me in the caboose that let me know when to get on the air. And Bill Yeager had made me a spot with Buddy Morrow's Night Train. And I was on the air from 8 till midnight with the Big Daddy Lineman Night Train show. Yeager did me a beautiful spot, and I was going to tell you, Yeager, that I met Duke Ellington and his son Mercer later years at a hotel I was in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And happened to mention that to him, and he said, you know, of all of the Night Train music that had been reproduced after his original version, of course, he said that Buddy Morrow Night Train twist was one of his favorite. We had a promotion. We started, and all of the jocks were going to go out and be on the air for this show, and something happened, and I'll be darned if I can remember what happened, but anyway, it ended up being me, and I had asked, they were going to shut it down, and I said, look, can I go out there and do this, because I run the 8 to midnight show, and the kids are really looking forward to this, and what I'll do is use this as a promotion to keep the kids in school. So that was my theme. I'll stay on the air if you stay in school. And so we went out there. It was 1962, Labor Day weekend. Of course, I couldn't sleep the night before. My God, I should have started it then or early in the morning. But we waited till about noon on a Friday or Saturday. So anyway, I started on this show, and of course, if you all remember the dump drive-in with the tin can bent and all of that, and a crazy guy that owned the place, I can't remember his name, but he said, Jody, I'll give you a dollar for every hour you're on the air and can bring people in here. It'll help me out, too. So that's how it started, and it went to 20 and 30 and then 40 hours, and then pretty soon I started hearing that we were getting some action from in Denver. They were having a Library Congress radio deal, and started getting some telegrams in from some of the artists of the day. To make a long story short, it went 84 hours and 50 minutes. The guy gave me $100 for doing that, and it was just really a cool deal. But the main thing was that I had kids come up to actually say, you know what? Big Daddy, it does make sense. I am going to stay in school. And I got a telegram from President Kennedy at the time, wow. And that was sent by Pierre Salinger. And I also got a 3-page letter from Secretary of Labor Willard Wirtz, who said the country appreciates what we KD Radio was doing out there to keep kids in school. So that was my experience. It was a wonderful time. One last thing, about 62 hours into it, I remember coming back. I got 10 minutes off. 10 minutes to the hour, I got to go to the dump, have a hamburger, go to the bathroom, whatever I needed to do, and come back. And if you remember, the caboose was, you had to bend down to get into the thing. It didn't have a full door. It was just a half door type thing underneath. And so I bent down and stood up, and I had no idea where I was. I didn't even have an idea who I was. And I looked around, and on the left side, I seen cars coming in. I go, that's not right. They should be coming in from the right-hand side. I looked at the right-hand side where the cover was over there where cars parked, and I go, that's not right. That belongs on the left-hand side. Then I look out front, and there's a flower shop across the street, and I go, how in the hell did that get there? And so I was totally lost, and had it not been for Bill Yeager and the Buddy Merrill Night Train Twist introducing me, I would have had no idea what was going on. But right at the last second, bingo, I heard that, and I already had a record cued, and away we went for the rest of the 20-some hours.
Wow. Well, yeah.
And it was all Yeager's fault? It was his idea, right?
You know, I'm not sure who came up with the original idea, but all of the jocks were going to take a segment. But something happened, and I'd be danged if I remember what it was. Do you know, Bill?
No, I don't. No memory at all.
I'll be darned.
I have another jingle I would like to play for you guys, and then we'll talk a little bit about Katie and cars.
You and that Ford.
And the Chevy, too.
This is KATI motorized for you. For the Dolls and the Dodge and the Pontiac.
Even for that chauffeur-driven Cadillac.
Don't look now, you can take our word. Your June 1400, the best to be heard. Whatever you drive, take it easy. Stay alive with 1400 KATI.
If Drake Chenault heard that jingle today, they would be, that's the Katie song. But you know what? Katie was on every car radio in this town if you were under the age of probably 40 years old. Would you agree with that, gentlemen?
Absolutely. Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, with the price of gas at 26 or 28 or less cents a gallon, the CY strip and starting out at the dump and going all the way out to the A&W, that was the thing to do, wasn't it?
Yep.
And the ratings bore that out, too. I mean, that's official.
Bill Sims at the time said that we actually had a little higher ratings through 62 than Coma at that time. I remember him saying that.
Mm-hmm. Could be. I don't know. Don't remember that. But somebody mentioned the CY strip, and when Ray was talking about one of his colleagues, he mentioned, of course, John Garrity, but another one was a guy named Ed Tenney, who's since passed on. And as I remember, Ed Tenney invented the CY strip. He was trying to find a way to sell nighttime radio, which is not so easy. And so he created this show at night, CY you buy on the CY strip. And he sold a bunch of local merchants out there, and we made some money at night, too.
Yeah, Ed was the one that built that. In fact, Ed came up with an awful lot of them. Ed's, you know, Ed came up with Tanya the White Reindeer. You know, Ed was, I actually replaced Ed because he'd had a heart attack, and then I replaced him, and then Ed, Ed came back, and then Ed and I worked together for quite a while. You know, when I first started there, Dick Freck, Bill Woods, Gene Dyke were there, and Barbara Sage Cuban was our Saturday receptionist.
Folks, I have one more piece of audio to play, and then we're going to have to wrap up this little party, at least for today anyway. See if you I would like to get Kevin's comments when this is over with, because I'd like to find out what the where this song came from.
Side to side, no longer can I sleep. You're running through my mind, what good is counting sheep? I can hardly wait until sun rises. So be there, like the blue skies. Tomorrow when until then, until sunrise with you.
This is KATI, Casper, Wyoming, signing off the air. KATI is owned and operated by ModCom Corporation of Casper and operates on its assigned frequency of 1400 kilohertz with a power output of 1000 watts daytime and 250 watts nighttime as authorized by the Federal Communications Commission in Washington, D.C. Until this morning at 5 a.m., this is Pat Meenan speaking for the entire staff and management of KATI Radio, wishing you a pleasant good night.
There's Pat Meenan.
Yeah, this was, and Bill Simmons probably remembers, but this is a fellow named Joe Fingers Carr and his orchestra, the song Sunrise, and actually Ken and Misha Prather were the two that picked that. That was the original sign-off from the time they owned the station.
That's right. I remember that, too, yes.
Yeah, and, yeah. And my dad
and
was in...
The Star-Spangled Banner, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, I have to relate a story. When I was there, I started at KATI when I was 15. And, of course, when you start, why, you know, you're at the very bottom of the shift and all of that. And when we would sign off on Sunday night, why, you know, you would play this song and you're going, okay, you're a 15-year-old kid and you hear this and it's just, oh, where did this music come from? And you want to jazz it up a little. And it happened to be one night that your dad was listening. And we found some other appropriate instrumental. I don't remember what it was, but we had the script for sign-off. And I got to tell you, we played that. You know, this is KATI 1400, ModCom, the whole nine yards. It wasn't 10 minutes. It wasn't 5 minutes. It was about 15 seconds, and the phone rang, and it was your dad. And for some reason, he had been up that night and listening. And I've got one of the biggest chewing outs for replacing that song. That was a history in his eyes.
Well, he listened to the radio all the time, and if he didn't, Wakefield and Bill Simms did to make sure things were right. But actually, that song meant a lot to him because of the history and linkage to the early days of KATI. It was scratchy. It was out of print. They made multiple copies. They bought up every copy they could find. But that's why it sounds like it does. They could never find a clean original. That's just the scratches over the years and finally preserved on tape.
Well, I'll tell you, there's not a moment that I don't play that song, that I don't get a tear in my eye. You know, it's just one of those things. It's part of KATI history. Gentlemen, we got to wrap this up. Let's try and get some final comments here in the studio. Ray Ebert, talk just briefly about your time.
Well, I had spent about 9 years selling for KATI radio station here in Casper, and then moved on to other radio stations. Spent 45 years in the radio business. KATI gave me my start. I started there at $300 a month was my salary. So, you can you know where that came from.
Well, Pat was an accountant, and he knew how to pinch those pennies.
I was on a 90-day trial basis, you know, and I spent 9 years there with that 90-day trial basis. But it was a great part of my life. Made a lot of friends, you know, over the years. I still remember all of the guys that we're talking to today, and there's so many more. It's unbelievable.
Armin Noble, last comments.
Well, this was certainly very enjoyable. I have fond memories of Casper, Wyoming.
Thank you. Carl Mann, I guess you're next. I think maybe did we lose Carl? All right, let's see. Larry Payne, how about you?
Well, I think Katie will leave a lasting impression in my mind for forever and ever, because I was delegated to that production room, and it ended up being a major part of my life for the entire future. With that knowledge of production and everything, I was able to march into some rather heavy-duty talent markets, could wiggle myself into the schedules. So I thank Bill Sims and Larry Wakefield and all of the people that I worked with there, and I remember Ed Tenney very well, and too bad about his passing. But I just thank the Katie management and crew for just being there. It just was a very memorable experience, and I'll treasure it forever.
Jody Lindemann in California.
Well, I'm probably the only one who's actually born in Casper, Wyoming. Throw that in. But raised in Douglas and then come back to Casper. And I fell in love with Katie. And it's been in my mind ever since. And I know I've talked to a couple of the jocks. And I asked, do you have dreams when you're kind of, you can't make it into the door quite quick enough to get on the air or something? And they say, yeah, I have those dreams also. Well, it's never left me. And well, you just played that theme song that many, many nights that I used to close off the show. So, yeah, I brought a tear to my eye, and I want to thank Dave once again. What a deal you've put together here, and my congratulations to you.
Bill Yeager in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Well, as you've already heard, I was at war with the Wyoming climate the entire time I was there. But I made a lot of good friends there, both in radio and in the community, and I did have a really good time. I wanted to mention a couple of names just quickly before I go. The people that were there that we haven't brought up yet, Jim White was on the air, the late Jim Hayes, of course, Steve Harris we have mentioned. A couple of the office girls were Judy and Pat, and I'm sorry I don't remember their last names.
Oh, Judy was great.
Yeah.
Judy Lewis.
I guess that was it, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was a sweetheart.
We're going to be talking to her probably tomorrow.
Good.
So, anyway.
Wonderful.
Sarge McClintock, you and I worked together at KVOC first when I was about 13 years old. You very patiently let me sit in your production room and watch you two do production. And you instructed me on how to put music on tape and how to use my voice. And I will forever, as long as I live, be thankful for you for that, because I've been doing this for over 45 years as well. Sarge McClintock, any final comments?
Well, it touches me that you recall that so fondly, Dave. It really does. Katie, I would summarize as saying, filled my life in a way that I didn't even realize at the time, as did all of the people on the line today. I cherish the memory of it all, and I add my thanks to you, Dave, for putting this together. It's been a real hoot.
Well, I'll tell you what, it has really mushroomed, and it started out as a very small idea, but I'll tell you what, I'm sure thankful for everybody for helping out. Finally, down in Puerto Rico, Will Sims, you're going to be with us actually again tomorrow, as we will be talking with Larry Wakefield and some of the other folks. But, Will, any final comments on this group today?
Well, wonderful group. Gee whiz. Thanks, guys. I really, really enjoyed this. I want to just say God bless Pat Meenan. You know, brought me back as program director, and 2 years later, at the age of 24, he let me be the general manager of a radio station. I will forever be in Pat's debt. It went on to buying my own stations, in fact, a total of 15 of them over some 50 years in radio. It all started with Pat Meenan. God bless Pat.
And finally, Kevin Meenan. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you and your mom, Shirley, digging through those dusty boxes, and we all remember what Pat's office looked like. I can't even imagine what the garages and things look like, but thank you so very much and for your dad and your contribution to this KD Classic weekend.
I appreciate that, Dave, and I echo everyone's sentiments in putting this together. Thank you for this. KETI Radio, I grew up in radio, was a part of this community at a time really was kind of the golden age of radio before the computers that you deal with now and the digital age and the change in the FCC regs and everything that's happened that's changed radio. This had a profound impact on Casper, and it's all due to the good people that served for KATI, and including these fellows you've had here today. So my hat's off to all you guys. Thank you.
And thank you all. We'll leave you with one final little piece of audio.
In the good old summertime, we listen to KATI.
Thank you all, and best of luck. Take care. Now, we do want to remind you, tomorrow morning again at 9 o'clock, we'll have another group of KD employees and former announcers. This time, we'll be looking primarily at the mid to late 60s as we remember KD on this KD Classic weekend. So until then, tomorrow at 9, we'll say goodbye for now. I'm the real Don Steele on KATI Radio.
This has been Free For All, your morning telephone discussion program. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KATI, its ownership, management, employees, or sponsors.